Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to Tip TV Finance. My name's Paul Rodriguez, and today in the studio I'm joined by my very good friend Tim Price from Price Value Partners.
Hello, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Well, that's the first question. Will it be a Happy New Year, do you think?
It's always a Happy New Year.
Right. What about financially in the markets?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, the consensus seems to be up and away, at least as far as US markets are concerned, certainly stocks. And the Trump effect still seems to be alive and well, and he hasn't even been inaugurated yet.
So we call it the Trump jump? The Trump pump. Well, when will we get the Trump dump?
That's who knows? On the basis of buy the rumour, sell the fact, in about 2 weeks' time.
You think?
Who knows? But I guess the critical thing is, I was looking at, there's a piece in, recent piece in the FT, making the point, I think it's from Gillian Tett, and she was making the point that however many of the current shadow cabinet, the incoming administration, unlike the Obama administration, where you had zillions of years experience in government, the cumulative experience of the incoming squad is trivial by comparison, but they've all got massive experience in business. That could yet be the sort of the slightly more benign aspect of the presidency, that the cynic would say, well, he's just packing the cabinet with sort of plutocrats and millionaires and billionaires. But the more open-minded observer might say, this is going to be an administration that's going to be great for business.
And do you share that view?
I've got an open mind, but I'm minded to believe that, let's say, given the choice that the US electorate had, I think this is going to be better for the markets than Clinton would have been, miles.
A lot of it looks like it's in the price at the moment, but and perhaps, you know, the market will be set up for a correction.
I think things have got a little bit ahead of themselves, because the one thing that a lot of people have sort of intimated is that the Trump administration is like the second coming of Ronald Reagan.
Right.
But when you start comparing valuations, the state of the market, the state of the US economy back then, when, say, what it was at 1980, versus what Trump's got, back then you had interest rates at 16-odd% or so. You had fairly high inflation. I think the S&P 500 was trading on like 7x earnings.
Yeah.
Now you've got interest rates basically at more or less zero, but trending up. You've got fairly anemic growth. And you've got the S&P 500 trading on a Shiller adjusted P of 27, 28 times. Altogether different.
So, talking of interest rates, did you get a Christmas card from Mark Carney at all?
No, funnily enough, I didn't get that gilt-edged Christmas card on the bus. I can only assume either I've fallen off his list, or maybe there's some kind of software malfunction at the Bank of England.
Well, maybe he read your book over the holidays.
Possibly he did.
Just to give the viewers a bit of insight, Tim's written a book, Investing Through the Looking Glass, and it's a fantastic read. Actually, I say that, haven't read it yet, but I know I will read it. Tim writes a weekly newsletter, which is a great combination of information on the financial markets written in a very entertaining way, and I'm sure his book's going to be exactly the same. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
That's very kind. So, yeah, the genesis of the book was basically the financial crisis that sort of went mega in 2008. So I, probably like many asset managers out there, was sort of scratching my head when the system was teetering on the brink, literally looking into the abyss, and saying, how on earth did we get here? And the book is effectively, it's part of, I guess, a synopsis of how we got here, and that's taking the long view. It's not just the last few years, it's the dawn of the Federal Reserve and, you know, contemporary economics, all of this stuff bundled together, the history of banking. And it's also, how do we get out of this mess? And what are the best routes for investors potentially to get out of this mess? So I like to think I've covered a lot of ground. The one thing that was very cathartic about the whole experience was everybody gets their hour in the sin bin, so no one escapes blame from all this.
Right. Okay. So what would be the, apart from the advice to read the book, what's the one thing that you would suggest that to an investor that they do right now, apart from what, perhaps buy gold? Or
well, put it this way, without giving away too many of the hidden gems of value within the book,
okay,
there are a number of opening chapters about the causes of the problems. The solutions, I cite three specific things, and they each get a chapter. Gold is one of those chapters. Trend following is one of those chapters. Value investing, particularly from an equity market perspective, is one of those chapters. So that gives you hopefully a sense of various options that people might want to deploy to preserve and grow their capital in what I'm sure is going to be a difficult period.
So if you could have lunch with any investor, and don't say Warren Buffett, who would it be?
It's a very good question. I would say, to be absolutely honest, and it relates to the part that dwells on trend following, I would probably have it with Jesse Livermore, who's no longer with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think as a investor / trader, and that one of the reasons I mention that is because over the Christmas holiday, I've been rereading the book Reminiscences of a Stock Operator.
Fantastic book.
And I had forgotten just how brilliant that book is.
Absolutely.
So I first came across it because it comes very highly recommended by anybody, basically, in finance. But the first time I read it was probably 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it made an impact, but that impact, whatever it was, has clearly been, I'd clearly forgotten.
Yeah.
Rereading it more recently, it is just the Bible for traders. I put it up there with any other book as just containing innumerable examples of just really profound trading and investing advice.
I never have a copy, and the reason why is I always give it
away.
You
always send it to other people?
No, I always just give it away.
Yeah.
And it was the first book when I worked at NatWest. If a new trader came in into the dealing room, we'd give him a copy and say, right, read that. Also in teaching courses, I would say, read that book. If you don't like it, trading's not for you.
Because the skeptic would say, well, it was. It relates to a period, you know, the start of the 20th century and the 1920s. You think, well, that's going to be old hat, but it isn't.
No,
it's
not
absolutely timeless.
I mean, if you look at everything in the markets, there's nothing new under the sun.
And that's exactly what he said. You know, the markets don't change because human nature doesn't change.
Exactly. And that's the essence of technical analysis as well. And Reminiscences of a Stock Operator does actually refer to Jesse Livermore, although it's not implicitly said in the book.
It's a sort of thinly veiled autobiography, basically. So the notional author is Edwin Lefebvre, who was
that's
a U.S.
right.
journalist.
Yeah.
And the sort of the hero, if you like, is Lawrence Livingston, I think it is in the book, Larry Livingston. But it's pretty clear, once you sort of see the bigger perspective, it's all about Livermore.
And you mentioned gold earlier on as being, you know, well, we talked about gold just to sort of move back to the financial markets a little bit. What do you have a view on Bitcoin? I mean, obviously, it's hit all-time highs, or not all-time highs, but relative highs compared to gold recently.
Within our wealth management business, we don't use Bitcoin. That's not an anti against Bitcoin. We do own gold, and we own gold-related mining concerns. The reason I think Bitcoin probably is something to back for the long run. The reason I'm skeptical, or let's say not wholly enthusiastic about it, in the same way that I'm about physical bullion, is firstly I'm a bit of a Luddite, so I don't necessarily understand the tech, mm-hmm. and because I don't necessarily fully understand the tech, I'm not 100% confident that although they say there's only ever going to be 20 million or whatever units coined, I've no way of validating that. So for me, that's a big part of the sort of skepticism about the whole process. But I think the whole what is it called, the blockchain and the technology around Bitcoin, revolutionary. That's the future of finance.
And I share your views there. I mean, my view is if you can create something like this from zero, then perhaps you can create another one.
What I suspect is going to be the case is that Bitcoin so far is like the new kid and the big kid on the block in relation to cryptocurrencies. Are we going to see more? I think we're going to see thousands of different ones.
Is it just a relatively scarce commodity like gold?
Because it's electronic.
And therefore it's not money.
Yeah, because electronic and, as far as I understand, and entirely digital, I don't see how that can ever be as... There are three characteristics that I say underlie all great investments. And they are they independent? Are they scarce? Are they permanent? I don't think you could say that about Bitcoin.
That's a really good point. Is it permanent? We don't know. Could it be suddenly ruled out by the government as being something that they don't want to?
Because I saw a post on Twitter for me is becoming increasingly guilty pleasure. Yeah. But I also think that the service has value. And I saw a tweet from someone a few days ago, and it was in relation to Bitcoin, and it was in relation to currencies. And he was talking about the effectively exchange rate between Bitcoin and physical bullion. Yeah. And he says something about, you know, are these stateless currencies, you know, do they have any value? And my response to that was, it's the fact that they're stateless that gives them the value. Mm-hmm. For people like me who are skeptical about the fiat money system, the fact that something stateless helps. But in terms of moneyness, I think the things that underlie the value of an alternative currency, those three characteristics, independence of the rest of the system, certainly from central banks, scarcity, i.e. there's a finiteness underneath them, and permanence. Gold definitely has that in my view. Whether Bitcoin does, I think, is open to debate.
Would you be more tempted to buy a bond or a stock, you know, because at least it has a yield?
Not a bond, I think, in this stage in the cycle, but certainly a stock. If there were a stock that had, let's say, more finiteness to it, let's say there was a limited capacity, then I would, yes.
And you mentioned Twitter as your guilty pleasure. What's your Twitter handle if somebody wants to follow
you? At Tim F. Price.
Tim F. Price. Yeah. Right, okay, great. Well, anyone who wants to send you a message today can...
Oh, my God, the floodgates are now officially open.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, I'm certainly going to send you a few, so you're going to get some. So, talking of bonds, obviously it's been an asset that's come under a lot of pressure globally, but you're not looking just at sort of G5, G10, you're looking outside of that remit, perhaps the road less travelled in terms of...
Yeah, I mean, my sense is that, I mean, you have to trace everything back to the US Treasury bond market, because it's the largest in the world, it's the deepest, it's the most liquid, it's still the reference rate for every other credit instrument that trades. My sense is that the great bull run that started in the early 80s, effectively under Volcker at the Fed, that's lasted 30-odd years. I think that bull run ended last summer.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Now, on that basis, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's head for the hills time. It may well be that we see yields stabilize at higher levels and then plateau for a while. The Fed almost certainly has to keep rates pegged, because otherwise we're going to have another financial crisis if yields just back up indefinitely. But I think the great bull run is over. On yeah. that basis, it's a really open and interesting question as to what happens if that money rotates elsewhere. I think there's two perfectly equally valid arguments. One is that if you get a bear trend in rates, that drags down stocks as well, because nothing operates in isolation.
Yeah.
But there's also an argument that money rotates out of bonds into the stock market. Mm. So at the moment, I think it's too early to say what's going to happen. But for my money, the bond market is best to be avoided altogether.
Yeah.
And as far as an equity market perspective is concerned, you know, we're value investors. So for us, the path of least resistance is just to go with extreme value.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right in the short term that there has been a rotation out of bonds into stocks, and that's perhaps why we've seen this jump, as well as, you know, obviously we mentioned Trump earlier on.
But I mean, but particularly from a US perspective,
yeah,
you know, valuations are looking pretty toppy here.
Yeah,
and there's a lot, and the consensus is clearly bullish. So there's a lot of optimism out there. Exactly. So where's the marginal optimist going to come
exactly.
from?
Exactly. So it wouldn't take much for the bond yields to start to spook investors a bit and push the market back down.
For sure. So I think we're in a really fascinating point in the markets. You know, things could go in a number of different directions. It's too early to say for sure, but being value based, being defensive as a matter of course, I would advocate caution rather than, you know, load up the truck.
And just finally on sterling, what's your outlook for the currency this year?
I'm pretty bullish for sterling, certainly against the dollar and especially against the euro. Yeah. I am amazed at how comparatively resilient the euro has been. Given that as a self-avowed Eurosceptic, as far as I'm concerned, the Eurozone project is now under, you know, there's now a Damocles sword hanging over this whole thing.
Definitely.
I'm surprised there isn't more scepticism about, you know, the value of the euro out there. But I say I like, you know, we've had this sort of certainly once in a decade, if not once in a generation sell-off on the back of Brexit. I think all things equal, I never bought into the whole Project Fear thing. Strikes me that if Brexit is handled half right by the government over the course of the next few months and next couple of years, the UK, and already the UK economy is doing far better than, you know, the fearmongers were suggesting.
Yeah.
The UK may be a very good place to be for the next few years.
I think we've taken all our pain up front.
And, I agree. And, yeah, I completely agree.
So let's see. Well, thank you, Tim. It's a pleasure as always.
My pleasure.
And we look forward to hearing more from you throughout the rest of the year.
Thank you.
That was Tim Price from Price Value Partners. You've been watching Tip TV Finance.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.